Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
All right, glad you're with us. And from our nation's capital, we are in Washington, D.C., and you can lower that, Jason, and it's the Sean Hannity Show. 800-941-SEAN is a toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this program? Well. Oh, my gosh. The Georgia 6th District is going to be a disaster. More money than any other campaign in the history of president congressional campaigning. The Georgia 6th District, Ossoff, got Ossoffed, if you will, in the race yesterday. I tell you, the amazing thing about that this is, I tweeted it out last night, there is the most depressing CNN picture. Every person on the set, they look like their dogs died simultaneously. It was like a mass dog death on TV. They couldn't believe it. Trump's done it again. How did he do it? And then over there at Conspiracy TV, MSNBC. We're going to get to this in a minute. Oh, I've got a special song for Chris Matthews today. It's one of my favorites. As a matter of fact, I think it probably is my favorite that we'll get to in a little bit here. And Chris Matthews, you know, Mr. Obamagasm, thrill up his leg, and I think the greatest, one of the greatest tapes we've ever put together. And we're going to play it for Chris. We're going to dedicate the song to Chris today. Anyway, you know, this one sad side of all of this is, I didn't find out today, is, you know, Karen Handel was targeted by anthrax envelopes in the closing days of this campaign in the Georgia 6th race. Democrats, I guess, desperate for a win. And anyway, it's no surprise that the attempt, you know, in this environment where we're targeting Republicans for assassination in their assassination list, but our friends over at WSB TV, our affiliate station, TV station in Atlanta from our WSB radio station. Anyway, authorities were called to the neighborhood where Karen Handel lived in Roswell. I lived in Roswell for 4 years after suspicious envelopes were around the mailboxes, and police say that, you know, one of them was shut down for several hours while crews had to investigate. I've been through this in my life. It's not a fun thing. I'll never forget my assistant at the time, Elise, ended up being scared to death for like 8 hours and literally had to be cordoned off from anybody else. I couldn't even say anything. I couldn't even call her because of white powder being sent. Now, I don't get mail. And people say, why don't you return my mail? And then, because I don't get it. I mean, I really appreciate people being thoughtful, and I wish we didn't live in this day and age where this type of thing happened, but it does. The most amazing thing, and there's a lot of amazing things as I analyze this race in this runoff in the Georgia 6th District. First of all, sound like Linda, we're in D.C., and by the way, many thanks. We're at Hillsdale College in their radio station today. They were gracious enough to lend it to us last minute because of our trip down here. Why are you down there, Hannity? I'm not telling you. Well, Hannity, I want the media to speculate. Let them go run rampant. It's like the New York Times, the list of 20 people that talk to the president, you know, that are outside the administration, Sean Hannity. I said, I wrote them on Twitter. You have no idea what I do. They didn't even pick up the phone and ask me. There is no record. They have no idea what I do or I do not do. No evidence whatsoever. Except, well, they've got anonymous sources telling them everything. Well, that's why their reporting sucks and is so god-awful, and so wrong and why they are fake news. He could have called me and asked, and I wouldn't have told him anyway. You know, it's nobody's business. Remember the whole issue with Newt Gingrich flying to Indiana? Oh, was it Hannity that paid for Newt Gingrich's plane? Hannity flew him in. Hannity did it. And then they're asking me, and I said, I'm not telling you what I do or I don't do for a friend. It's none of your business. I actually have friendships in life that are none of the media's business. I hate to tell you, my whole life is whatever. It just frustrates me. Anyway, so in the runoff yesterday in the 6th District, this was a real test of the destroy Trump election strategy that the Democrats plan to use to recapture the House. And they had all this Hollywood left-wing money flying into the district and outside the district. The funniest thing about this race is the guy that's running on the Democratic side, he can't even vote for himself in the race because, oh, he doesn't live in the district. And I think it was the Washington Examiner or the Free Beacon on one of these papers actually went out there and they showed that it would be a 2-mile walk from this guy's house into the district that he supposedly wants to represent. That's pretty funny. So anyway, they got all this money in and all this free media attention, and the media was all jacked up last night and all hyped up, and they were excited. I knew 100% the race was over days ago because I got on the phone, let's see, Newt Gingrich, and he had talked to Matt Towery, who knows Georgia better than anybody, a pollster of many years down there, and Matt Towery's son, and then Randy Evans, who's a great attorney down from with Denton and Associates. He was on the call, and Newt Gingrich talked to him, and all these guys that know the 6th District in Georgia, which I used to live in, they're like, it's not going to happen. I didn't bother talking about it. Why didn't I bother talking? Because I knew it was in the bag. Oh, Hannity right again. No, we can't have that. You know, media wrong on how many issues? Media wrong that Trump could win. Media wrong that Obama would be the great president, great peacemaker in life, and bring economic progress to everybody, get 13 million more Americans on food stamps and lowest labor participation rate and the 8 million more in poverty. The hell with them. They're only people, real lives, real people, real misery that Obama created. And $9 trillion in debt is irresponsible and unpatriotic, but let's just more than double it. Why not? Let's go. Spending spree. Nobody will call me out on it. You know, media's wrong about George Zimmerman. They had convicted him without any evidence presented in the case. They're the same thing. Hands up. Don't shoot. Ferguson, Missouri. They're wrong there. We've been right, by the way, on every one of these issues. Hands up. Never happen. Don't shoot. Never happen. Whoopsie daisy. They don't talk about pigs in a blanket. Fry them like bacon. Black Lives Matter and their association and invitations to the White House or Hillary wanting their endorsement. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now. And, of course, they were wrong on Freddie Gray. Freddie Gray running away from a bicycling police officer at 8 a.m. in the morning and an own drug dealer. And they thought they had every one of those six cops. And I said at the time, nah, it's not going to happen. Duke lacrosse case, they were wrong on that, too. And we were right. You know, by the way, we'll never get credit. I'm not looking for credit. But they were wrong in this race, knew they'd be wrong. And despite the efforts of Karen Handel's campaign to keep the focus on issues, the media never portrayed this contest as anything else but a national referendum on Trump. I lived in Georgia. I know the people of Georgia. Down-to-earth, hard-working, God-faith, family country for the majority of people in Georgia. It doesn't matter. Some Democrat, some Republican. I got to know a lot of, I will tell you this, one of the greatest experiences was meeting a lot of the pioneers in the civil rights movement. It was an education for me meeting Maynard Jackson and Hosea Williams and Andy Young and Joe Lowery and these guys that risked their lives and made the country a better place. That was an education. We might have disagreed politically, but they were brave men that made our country a better place. Anyway, Georgia's 6th District, fake news, media national polls had the president's approval rating as low as 36%. And special surveys even claim that the majority of Americans believe Trump obstructed justice and now favor impeachment. And our friend John McLaughlin had a poll from there from 2 weeks ago. And John McLaughlin says, don't trust these polls. They're full of crap. They're wrong. Just like they've always been wrong. So we knew on this show what was happening. Now, what I didn't want to do, I didn't want to call attention to what I knew. Why? Because why Why break them out of their fantasy when you know reality is going to catch up with them very, very quickly, which it did? You know, it's one of the most fascinating things. You know, now the Republicans under Donald Trump, Trump is 4-0 in House GOP contests. They also won last night. He got very little play. Is, you know, the latest race to replace Mick Mulvaney in South Carolina's 5th District. Whoopsie-daisy, another Republican win. And by the way, Hollywood, that was a big fail because Hollywood, well, they had massive celebrity help in Georgia. I didn't know the people of Georgia were that fond of Hollywood, but apparently they are. Anyway, you got, let's see, in April you had a bunch of people. You had, let's see, Rosie O'Donnell, Jane Fonda, Samuel L. Jackson donating time and money to OSEF's campaign. And that's what we need, Hollywood liberals coming into Georgia to promote a Democrat for the people of Georgia. I know the people of Georgia. They're not impressed with Hollywood. They don't really give a rip about Hollywood. Sort of like I don't give a rip about Shakespeare in the park and laying out a blanket and laying out my champagne caviar and watching with great fascination the profundity of A2 Brute and Romeo, 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 wherefore art thou, Romeo? Let's kill a Trump-like figure. OSEF had a 30-year documentary filmmaker turned Democratic politician. Samuel L. Jackson. What's this other actor's name? John Leguizamo? Who's that guy? You know who he is?
John Leguizamo.
Who's he?
He's a New Yorker.
New Yorker? Yeah. Everyone. Yeah. Alyssa Milano. You know, she literally personally drove voters to the polls in Georgia. This is hilarious. And then they had the Hollywood meltdown last night after OSEF lost. I thought this was hilarious. Breitbart, Alyssa Milano tweeted out, group hug, get in, group hug. What, a virtual group? What is a virtual group hug? What is that? And you had, let's see, Rosie, Donald Trump is the darkness himself. I think they've convinced themselves that all conservatives are evil, that want dirty air, water, kill grandma, kill children, that they're racist, sexist, misogynist, Islamophobic, xenophobic, homophobic. They believe all this garbage. Deborah Messing, this is so hard to process. Joy. What kind of message is that? What's the guy that was on Star Trek? George Takei? Takei? What's his name? Takei? Whatever. What did he? You know, he's good in Star Trek. I like Star Trek. Sweet Baby James loves Star Trek. Very strong effort by John Ossoff. And all the voters and activists should be proud. Onward to 2018. And I think the funniest thing of all is over at NBC, we had a funeral on CNN. And then what did Rachel Maddow do? She goes right back to Russia, 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 Russia. And we have a little message at the bottom of the hour for Chris Matthews and Rachel Maddow. We're going to get to that today. If you want some real takeaways from the election, it's that, well, let's see, you've got politics is local, Hollywood can't impact it, and, you know, you can't demonize people, that red state America is not as susceptible to the lies like people in California are and elsewhere. You know, by the way, these elections tend to go against people in the White House, so there was a wind in the face of Republicans here. Jim Pinkerton pointed that out in his column. Yeah, and the president's a polarizing figure. So's Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats. And by the way, then you got health care, and most people still support the president's agenda, which I'm going to get to in a few moments.
Hey, with optimism once again on the rise in America, the working people of this country are more important than ever. Well, now they have a podcast that celebrates them and tells their stories. On the Job, from Hired to Retired. Well, it's a new podcast from our friends at Express Employment Professionals that digs into the lives of men and women at work and explores their journeys as they fight to make the American dream a reality. On the Job takes the listener through the ups and downs of making a living in America. Now check out the new podcast, On the Job, from Hired to Retired, on iHeartRadio, iTunes, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Or just go to expresspros.com/podcast for more information.
right, as we roll along from our nation's capital, it's the Sean Hannity Show. I want you to listen to Jay Johnson. No evidence vote tallies were changed in the 2016 election.
Here's what you said in your opening statement, or in your prepared remarks, that to your knowledge, there was no vote tallying changes, that no one's vote was, they voted one way and it recorded some other way. Is that still your opinion that with respect to the 16 election, that the intrusions or attempted, whatever it is, Russians or others did not affect the actual voting itself?
Based on everything I know, that is correct. I know of no evidence that through cyber intrusions, votes were altered or suppressed in some way.
They weren't altered. They weren't suppressed in any way. No votes changed by the Russians in the 2016 election. And by the way, this is Obama's Homeland Security Secretary, also unloading on the DNC. I don't have time to play it now, but then he testifies to Representative Mike Conway. The FBI knew about the DNC hack months before I was told about it. Why did they get away with that? Okay, that's a great question. One Democrat, now think about this. You know, he just unloads on the DNC for basically, he served as Obama's Homeland Security Secretary, you know, from 2013 on. He said, you know, in retrospect, it'd be easy for me to say I would have bought a sleeping bag and camped out in front of the DNC because they refused to accept help from the Department of Homeland Security and they wouldn't turn their computers over to the FBI. Why not? What were they afraid of? Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut is saying that he thinks the Democratic Party spent too much time talking about Russia in Washington. You think? There's nothing there. Which is why the whole issue of moving from Russia, collusion, and Trump, okay, we don't have anything. Let's move on to obstruction. And Rosenstein, who did the two-page memo to fire Comey, says, yeah, maybe we should investigate Trump for doing what I said and firing Comey. And Comey leaks to the New York Times to get a special counsel, and Rosenstein helped get his friend Robert Mueller there. And then Robert Mueller hires all these Obama and Hillary Clinton donors. And then, oh, on top of that, he even goes as far as hiring Hillary Clinton's lawyer. And now he's doubled down on hiring Democratic donors to investigate Trump, not on Russia collusion, but now it's obstruction and Jared Kushner's finances and everything else that they want to look into. Think this isn't nuts enough for you? All right, when we come back, Mediaite, pay close attention. I've got a special song for you guys to post. It's dedicated to Chris Matthews and even tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist Rachel Maddow. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. So I didn't have a lot of time. I mean, we had a busy day yesterday, and we traveled here to Washington, D.C., and we had some stuff that we had to do. I guess I get in my hotel room at 1 o'clock, something like that. I don't know. Later? How much later? I don't remember. Anyway, so I go over to Mediaite. The Mediaite people, they love the fact, I'm going to be very blunt here, behind the scenes, they'll like send me, oh, you know, Liberal Joe said this about you. Do you want to respond? They love a fight. Now, it's a pretty cool website, in all honesty. It's very insider-y in terms of the TV and radio industry. And they love to cover fights. You know, they love to stoke fires. They think it's the most fun. Now, listen, I'm a counterpuncher, and frankly, Twitter, to me, is just pure entertainment. And I love any time, like, I'll start tweeting for an hour, Hannity went on a Twitter rampage. Hannity went on a Twitter rant. Hannity's laughing his butt off at wherever he is sitting, and he's entertaining himself because he's probably bored. And people, Hannity, stop tweeting when you drink. If it's, you know, a funny thing is I finish my TV show at 11 o'clock most nights. 11 p.m. I've got an hour and 15 minute ride home. I'm bored in the car. Okay, so I'm driving and occasionally I tweet. Not when I'm driving. Don't ever tweet when driving. Don't use your phone when driving. And of course, follow all the laws, rules, and regulations of New York State, New York City. And of course, otherwise you'll be fined an exorbitant fund, an amount of money by your government that needs extra income. So they really screw you every way they can and take every nickel out of your pocket. So I see this article. So last night was the big, big night for the liberal media. And, oh, you got to bring me in the conspiracy theory list. Do you have that? Remember, you told me you brought it with you? Yeah, I don't have it. You have to find it. All right, so then I see that their headline is Maddow highlights Trump real estate financing from Russian sources close to Putin. And then the funny thing, they have a still shot of Rachel's show. And I don't have anything against Rachel Maddow. I don't want anybody to, you know, I know Media Equalizer pointed out, I had no idea she was such a conspiracy theorist. And I'll tell you why, because I never watch her show. I've seen it. You know, I saw the big tax. I got them. Taxes. We got $40 million. I don't know how I got it. It's in the mailbox. It was hilarious. You know, poor Geraldo Rivera, a friend of mine, was like, oh, man, why did this happen? Now they got to bring up Capone's vault again, because it was just like that. Big disappointment. Anyway, the screenshot is, I believe that these documents will be sufficient to start following the money. Every Democrat now is saying, Adam Schiff is saying it. Mark Warner is saying it. Dianne Feinstein is saying it. Joe Manchin is saying it. Maxine Waters is saying it. You know, all of these Democrats, one after another, all the people in the intelligence, Comey, Clapper, Admiral Rogers, Brennan, all of them, no evidence of collusion. Devin Nunes, no evidence of collusion. It just so, but they keep going. And the sinister part is what I was talking about before we get into break. And I'm like, wow, so they lose the Georgia 6 election, which was supposed to be the big focus of the show. And when in doubt, just go back to tinfoil hat conspiracy. So I wrote, the biggest conspiracy theorist in the country is Rachel Maddow. This is NBC News. And I wrote, hey, Tom Brokaw. Because Tom Brokaw, you know, I guess, came out. And you know what they ought to do on Megyn Kelly's new show? And I'm not, every time I mention Megyn Kelly, oh, Hannity's dissing Megyn. I'm not dissing Megyn Kelly. They're trying to create a fight between me and her. We don't have a fight. There's no fight going on. Anyway, but, you know, now that if they call Alex Jones a conspiracy theorist, well, maybe next week they should put on Rachel Maddow because of all of her conspiracy theories. And, you know, I'm thinking, is this really NBC News now? Is this is what it has devolved into? Is this what it's now become? Is this now what fake news is in the country, and that people are happy and prideful and, you know, ecstatic? Because I got a whole list here of some of the craziness of Rachel Maddow. I don't have time to play it all. I'm going to play a special song to Chris Matthews in a second. But I'm thinking, this is nuts. This is that Trump is a gateway drug to David Duke. KKK, Rachel Maddow said that. Trump wants to kill the press. Rachel Maddow said that. Let's see. Announcing Trump's tax returns. Oh, that was pretty funny. Now, this is on top of, you know, Bill Maher and his incest joke, and Colbert with his, you know, penis joke about President Trump, and picking on Ivanka, and picking on Melania, and picking on everyone else. Then you look at all the conspiracy. Venezuelans are rioting over donations to the Trump inauguration. Oh, I didn't know that the Venezuelans cared about that much. 2013, Maddow describes herself as left of Mao. Okay, probably a fairly accurate description based on what I'm reading. Flynn is the biggest scandal in presidential history. No, it's not. Not even close by any objective measure. Trump firing of Comey, unprecedented. Then cites the Clintons. You know, Maddow, we aired edited video that might not be an accurate portrayal of McCain's statements to the mother of the lost son. Well, why did you air it? Comparing Trump kids to Uday and Kusei. Trump inauguration funds go missing. The Russians took it. Trump says immigrants are vicious. Let's see. GOP talking points were written by Frank Luntz. Let's see. Promoted the, oh, remember the Boston bombing conspiracy that, well, they really were Zionists. They weren't Muslim. The Sarnoff brothers. FBI cover-up of Boston bomber's friend murder. We need answers. Defending Anthony Weiner. Bashes Andrew Breitbart after Weiner tweeted out a picture of his, couldn't have been that Weiner's a pervert. Obamacare opponents are planning assassinations. Wow. Spreading fake theories of Wiener's hacking. Speculates that Putin may blackmail Trump into withdrawing troops from Europe. Then, of course, she hyped a New Yorker report on Trump's deals in Azerbaijan. Blames Putin for WikiLeaks release of CIA documents. Do you have any evidence of these things? And then warns of a continuing operation alleging Trump-Moscow collusion, suggesting Trump chose Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State and weakened the State Department for Russia. Hypes that the presidency is effectively a Russian operative. Spent nearly 20 minutes on a Guardian report that stated British spies alerted U.S. intelligence as early as late 2015 about contacts between Trump's campaign and Russian intelligence. Says it seems clear that Trump is being investigated for obstruction of justice, but no confirmation. Maddow election, Russia, you know, I mean, it's just insane. And that's NBC News. All right. Thank you, Jason. And then I go and I'm on Twitter and I'm looking and I'm seeing Mediaite a little bit further. And then I see Chris Matthews. And I don't watch Chris Matthews' show either. Who can keep up with it? He asks the question of a guest, answers the questions for the guest, and then asks the guest, well, what do you think of my great answer? That was Roger Ailes' description of Chris Matthews' show. You know, another one who we kicked their ass, you know. By the way, when I went up against Rachel, 9 o'clock, head on, yeah, we won. We're winning our hour at 10 o'clock in spite of what people, you know, are printing. Fox has declined. Hannity's ratings have never been higher. Thank you, all of you, for that being true. And so Matthews, now you got to give him a little credit. He mocked me for comparing the Russia probe to the birther conspiracy. I'm talking about Russian truthers, Trump-Russia conspiracy truthers, because there's no evidence, none. 11 months of black helicopter theories from NBC News, no evidence. And this is what he says about me.
Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, remember him, midnight ride down to the EOB? He's telling donors in California this weekend that the Russian collusion story is made up. Quote, I was telling the truth. There was never any collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians. We have to stop chasing Russian ghosts around the closet and actually get to real work. Well, other Republicans echoed that thinking. Let's watch.
This has now become like Russia-Trump conspiracy, right. Birther conspiracies, you know, sort of truthers.
What a hoot. Did you just hear Hannity? He just compared it to birtherism. In other words, the nonsense of Trump is now standard for nonsense, even though it was Trump himself he was defending.
It's a great clip. And this is not.
Doesn't he know that that was Trump's, that was his birtherism?
And this
doesn't Hannity keep a file cabinet? This is Trump's crap. This isn't somebody else's. It's amazing.
No, he does.
You got me, Chris. I'm so, I'm brutalized. Terrible. You know, so I wrote out, this really is a hoot listening to Chris Matthews. I mean, the guy's nuts. He's certifiably insane. And so I said, hey, Mr. Obamagasm, thrill up your leg. Remember with him and during the Obama, that's a dog whistle. Dog whistle, dog whistle, dog. Everything was a dog whistle. You couldn't criticize Obama without it being race related. Anyway, I asked Chris to tune into this radio program, and I want to say give a special shout out to Mediaite and their employees right now, because I know they're listening and I know they're going to want to post this song, because I know they love this intramural battle between hosts on other networks. So I'm dedicating this song, Endless Love, to my friend Chris Matthews.
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I mean, I don't have that too often. And that is an objective assessment.
My love.
I thought it was Hollywood. It was romance.
There's only you in my life. The only thing that's right.
And we should be comfortable and will be with him in such a setting.
My first love.
It was realism.
Your every breath that I take, your every step I make.
I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
And I want to share all my love with you.
An Oval Office setting showing that he's comfortable.
No one else.
This is valuable material. This is real estate of the highest order.
Your eyes,
I
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
They tell me how much you care.
The guy's done everything. He's worked his butt off. He's been a good citizen. He's done everything right.
You will always be.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
My endless love.
That's the short version. What happened to the longer version? We have a longer version. Anyway, 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Look, I want to just, I don't care what they do on these other networks. It means nothing to me. I mean, in a lot of ways, people, you know, hype up these cable wars as if they're the biggest thing in the world. Cable news wars. Here's just the truth, and here's a reality. I'm not getting probably 5 Chris Matthews viewers over to my show, or Rachel Maddow viewers to my show, or Lawrence O'Donnell. Actually, Lawrence is a pretty nice guy. I actually like him. And why are you saying, because I met him, and you know what? Off air, he's a normal guy. Same with Don Lemon's a good guy. I like him, too. I'm sorry. Why are you giving me that nasty look like I'm a horror? Greta swears that Rachel's a nice person. They're all nuts. Their political views are crazy. And I get it. The conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat, black helicopter TV is interesting. And every night, every left-wing, radical, leftist Democrat in the country, you know, tunes in because they breathlessly report that Donald Trump's about to get impeached. Russia. Let's go to our news intro here, fake news. And this is brought to you by the Sean Hannity Show.
NBC News World Headquarters in New York. This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
This is the CBS Evening News with Scott Pelley. From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight with David Muir.
You know what the difference between me and liberals? I don't want to silence their voices. And when these attempts by these Soros, Clinton-funded groups to silence conservatives, all these free speech liberals are nowhere to be found. What a bunch of phony hypocrites. All right, here's a question that I have, and I actually saw it. I don't remember who tweeted it out, but I think it's an important question. Why did Facebook have this group out there, that this lunatic that made this the list and was out shooting in Alexandria, Virginia? Why was that even there? Anyway, we'll get the latest on the Georgia 6. Newt Gingrich will join us. Katie Hopkins today. Larry Kudlow. How do we get the economy moving for people in poverty on food stamps? And Jeffrey Lord, Chris Hahn. Democratic rhetoric straight ahead from D.C.
And we showed the world that in places where no one thought it was even possible to fight, we could fight. We showed them what courage and kindness and humility are capable of. We showed them that we can still build coalitions of people who may not see eye to eye on everything, but rather than demonizing each other, we find common ground to move forward. And that's the only way this country will move forward. So this is not the outcome any of us are hoping for. But this is the beginning of something much bigger than us.
We have had a legacy of tremendous leadership in the 6th District. Our very own Tom Price, who's now Secretary of HHS. Now Senator Johnny Isaacson. And former Speaker Newt Gingrich. These men, these statesmen, have created very, very big shoes to fill. And I will do my level best to live up to the standards that they have set. To the John Ossoff supporters, know that my commitments, they extend to every one of you as well. We may have some different beliefs, but we are part of one community, the community of the 6th District. And I will work just as hard to earn your confidence in the weeks and months ahead. And I give every Georgian this promise. My promise is to work every single day relentlessly to make our state and this country a better place.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Glad you're with us. Toll free, our telephone number is 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, so that was Karen Handel yesterday, and she is just as excited as can be that she won this race. The person that told me a number of days ago that she was going to win was Newt Gingrich. That's his former district, although it's been redistricted, I believe, since then. And when the votes were coming in last night, it was exactly pinpoint accurate as he had predicted to me the day before. And the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, joins us now. His brand new book, Understanding Trump, is one of the best-selling books now in the country. Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. Mr. Speaker, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing great, and of course, I was thrilled last night with Karen Handel's victory, and with the victory in South Carolina. We're now 4-0. I tweeted last night, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, 0, American People and Donald Trump, 4. And I think that's a pretty good way to summarize it.
Well, it's a great way to summarize it, I think, in a lot of ways, because, you know, this destroy Trump strategy that they had in your old district collapsed in Georgia. And by the way, South Carolina was a pickup.
No, that was Mulvaney's seat.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I thought it was a pickup. All right. So, but the bottom line is it's 4-0.
Right. They kept trying. Of course, one time they spent over $30 million. I mean, Ossoff was a creation of Hollywood money. He got more money out of California than any place else by a huge margin. He didn't even live in the district, which I think in the end was one of the things that killed him. Karen Handel ran a very courageous campaign. She kept coming back despite the media, despite all the glamorizing of Ossoff, despite his campaign. And in the debate, she had this one devastating moment when each of them was allowed to ask the other a question, and she said to him, who are you going to vote for in the election? And of course, he couldn't vote because he didn't live in the district.
It's hilarious.
And for about 10 seconds, he's staring at the table because he doesn't have an answer. He knows he looks like a fool.
Somebody actually took the time to walk from his house into the district, and it was a two-hour walk.
It's actually, I think it was the Washington Examiner did it. The guy was put it on Facebook, did the whole thing on Facebook Live, and it's hysterical. I mean, it made so vivid that this guy had nothing to do with the district that it was very, very powerful.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because then you watch Hollywood. This was a big loss for them last night. You know, Alyssa Milano, oh, we need a group hug. Oh, let's get in. Rosie, Donald Trump is the darkness himself. And Deborah Messing, this is so hard to process. We need joy. And, you know, I go back and I'm thinking, this is all part of this narrative. And you get into this in your book. They cannot accept that Donald Trump won. And then we get into more serious and more sinister issues involving this. And that is Robert Mueller and what Robert Mueller is doing. And of course, the collusion he has and the conflicts of interest he has with both Rosenstein and with James Comey. And then, of course, he's hiring Clinton's lawyers. And then he's hiring people that donated to Obama and donated to Hillary Clinton. And they're not investigating Loretta Lynch. They're not investigating Hillary Clinton. No, they're using investigative creep. And they go from Russia-Trump collusion to obstruction to financial issues of Jared Kushner. When does this end?
Well, I think it's not going to end until they find somebody. You have too many powerful lawyers who have too much at stake, who've left their jobs to go, and they're going to keep looking and keep looking and keep looking until they find somebody. And they're going to keep broadening what they're looking at over and over. And remember, the last time we went down this road was with James Comey appointing Patrick Fitzgerald as an independent counsel. And Fitzgerald ultimately went after Scooter Libby, largely because Libby would not turn on Dick Cheney. And Libby protected Dick Cheney. And so ultimately he got indicted on a procedural question after the special counsel had locked up a New York Times reporter for 85 days to try to force her to testify. I mean, these kind of things are sick, and it's kind of hard to imagine that they're actually happening in America.
But there's more Obama-Clinton donor hires. They're not. They're doubling down on these people. They did another one yesterday.
Oh, that's what's amazing is after I pointed it out and I suggested, you know, the Justice Department itself was 97% donations to Hillary and 3% to Trump. The law firm that Mueller comes from, WilmerHale, was 99. This is almost impossible to believe. They were 99.81% for Hillary and 0.18% for Trump. That means they gave $500 to Hillary for every dollar they gave to Trump. And I pointed out that if he really wanted us to believe he wasn't biased, he could hire one pro-Trump lawyer for every pro-Clinton lawyer. And as you point out, he promptly went out and hired another Clinton lawyer. I mean, it was kind of like just thumbing his nose at the whole country.
There is a report in the New York Post today, and it quotes Paul Sperry in a much overlooked development that I think could force a public showdown now between Lynch and James Comey. And that has to do with there are concerns that were raised by an April New York Times report that Lynch privately assured the Clinton campaign that she would keep FBI agents in check and wouldn't let their investigation, quote, go too far, according to a message the FBI intercepted from then Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now, that to me sounds like obstruction of justice. What does it sound like to you?
Well, look, if that turns out to be true, and it's unequivocally obstruction of justice, and it's unequivocally really, really bad news for Attorney General Lynch. I mean, I think this is the sort of thing, again, and I've noticed, to her credit, that Dianne Feinstein, the Democratic senator from California, who's the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee, has said that she believes they have to look into this whole issue of what exactly was going on with Lynch, which I think is a really big break for our side for her to say that. So I think that it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens next in that situation. And I do think that there's a pretty fair chance that you're going to see an investigation of Lynch. If what you just reported is true,
it's in the New York Post today.
Then I think that it is a very, very big story, and I think that it has a real, real event that I think that it could well lead to huge trouble.
One of the things I went back, I'm in Washington today, and I don't get down here all that often, although I was down here last week, is, you know, I was talking with a bunch of really smart, engage people today. And, you know, once we were talking about once the deep state hopefully gets cleaned up and the Obama holdovers are pushed out and those leakers are discovered and those people that perhaps are abusing or weaponizing politically the intelligence community, you know, somebody pointed out to me, and I thought a very intelligent woman, she goes, you know, if you go back and listen to the president's inaugural speech, it was very dynamic and very powerful. And in that speech, he reiterated his contract with the American voter, and those are the things, the agenda items he wants to accomplish. And I was thinking, you know, it'd be a really good thing, in spite of Mueller, in spite of all that's going on, and in spite of the conspiracy theories, for him to really take those issues again directly to the American people and get this done.
Well, I hope that he will do more and more of that. I know that he's in Iowa today. He has a great program underway, and I think if he will continue to work on it, that the American people will rally to him.
Well, and I think that's important. Are you confident that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have the urgency needed so that by the end of the year we're going to have the 15% corporate rate, the repatriation rate of 10%, middle-class tax cuts, Obamacare repealed and replaced and an alternative put in place, we're going to have the funding for the border wall, that we're you know, I mean, these to me are fundamental basic things, and it's, you know, here it is almost July, and we're not there.
Well, I think that
you think I'm impatient, and I don't know how Washington works, because you yell at me all the time.
First of all, that Ryan gave a very good speech this week on tax cuts and tax reform, moving the ball in the right direction. I think that Mitch is trying to find 50 votes so that with Pence's vote they could pass a health care bill in the Senate before the July 4th leaving for town. You know, I have a lot of faith that McConnell has a pretty good sense of how the Senate works. So I think that there's a fair chance he's actually going to pull this off. And if he does, it'll be a pretty big deal. People are going to start saying, look, that's a lot. A lot of smaller things are going through. A lot of smaller things that in the long run matter. A very important Veterans Administration reform bill was passed on a bipartisan basis recently. But I do think it's fair to say that people are not certain what the long-term patterns are. And I think that's a problem for us. I think that it would be helpful for the congressional leadership to be a little more aggressive. It would frankly be helpful for every single Republican in the House and Senate.
Well, I want to ask you about that.
Communications.
Stay right there. We'll come back. Communications is where we'll pick it up. We're in Washington, D.C. Many thanks to our friends. We're in the broadcast studios of Hillsdale College today. And when we come back, Newt Gingrich's book, Understanding Trump, bestseller, New York Times, and, of course, on Amazon, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. All right, as we continue with former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich is with us. His brand new book, Understanding Trump, now a huge nationwide bestseller. And you can get it on Amazon.com and Hannity.com and in bookstores everywhere. I want to go back to, you talked about communications with the Republicans. And all right, so Paul Ryan gave a great speech yesterday. I'm sorry if I don't get up and jump for joy. I just feel there's been a lack of urgency to move the agenda of the president forward. He's doing seemingly everything he can do possible on his own without their help.
Well, I think that's a little bit exaggerated. I think that you have a lot of people trying to move a very complicated series of things. The health bill is moving. They're going to get it. The infrastructure bill is beginning to be developed. The work that they're doing on taxes, I think, is going to come to fruition sometime this summer, early fall. So I'm not I'm not nearly as pessimistic as you are. I think that the congressional process is slow and cumbersome and difficult. And I think the bigger problem for the Republicans is communications. If they were out there explaining what all the different things we're doing, all the job creation that's underway, all the cuts in regulations that's underway, people have a lot better feeling about how much they're committed to getting things to move. There are actually a lot of things that are positive that are moving that get almost no attention.
Well, I understand and I hear what you're saying, and I know that I don't know your background, and I mean, I respect everything that you've done, but I also watched you do it. I watched you accomplish all of this, and to see that, others can't move as fast as you or with the urgency of you, it's a little frustrating to me. I really feel there's a lot at stake here. They've asked for this power. We've given them the power. And I mean, they're having a hard time even repealing, replacing Obamacare. How are we going to get the economic plan done? When are we going to get the wall built? You don't share my frustration, do you?
First of all, I think the wall is being built. I think MS-13 is being decimated. The number of those guys who've been arrested recently is amazing. I think that they're moving forward on a number of these issues. If you look at the amount of deregulation, for example, in energy, it is absolutely historic. We're going to see a lot more things like that. So, I mean, I think all of us need to keep pressure on the system. All of us need to try to make sure they pass the right legislation. But I think they're moving, and I don't say that mildly or just because I'm Pollyannish. I think I know from my visits in the White House how many different people are working very hard right now.
I'm not saying Trump's not working hard. I have confidence in Trump. I don't have confidence in Congress. And with all the noise out there, I think his success is going to be predicated on his agenda and promises being kept, not the noise on CNN and NBC.
But look, you just had a huge increase in Trump's believability last night. If you're a typical Republican in the House or Senate, and you look at a 4-0 Republican advantage, you look at the most money raised by the RNC, the least money in 14 years raised by the Democratic National Committee, you start to think, hey, something is happening.
And all right, Understanding Trump. Amazon.com, Hannity.com, bookstores everywhere. Mr. Speaker, always love having you, and thanks for being with us. All right, 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. The Gobby one, Katie Hawkins, will be checking. And Larry Kudlow on the economy and how do we get this economy moving. Jeff Lord, and the one and only Chris Hahn of the Chris Hahn Show will be checking in, and much more as we continue from our nation's capital.
8 years, you guys had a plan. You kept saying and promising you repeal, replace Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And I guess what people want to know is, when are these things going to get done?
We're exactly on the timeline that we designed for ourselves. Obamacare is coming next. Our bill is coming in March.
First, it's regulatory reform because we have this window of time to cancel bad Obama regulations. Then we're doing Obamacare. After we're done with Obamacare, then we're doing our budget. And our budget is what the second budget, which will be tax reform. So we're doing two budgets in 1 year, which has never been done before. This is faster than it's ever been done before.
When I heard repair, my head nearly exploded.
That's not the plan. The plan
is
to repeal and replace this law. Like we said, we ran on a plan to repeal and replace it. Tom Price helped write that plan. He is now Donald Trump's Secretary of HHS.
So there is a consensus plan that's now being scored by the CBO.
Correct.
You're saying to the American people and conservatives that are impatient, including myself, you agree with every item I mentioned, even extreme vetting.
Yeah. We passed that bill a year ago in the House.
I know you now agree with building the wall.
Yes.
Are you telling the American people vetting refugees, building the wall, repeal, replace, tax reform, all of this is going to be done in 200 days?
Inside the 200-day window is the regulatory reforms we talked about. It's the repeal and replace Obamacare. It's the budget. It's the rebuilding of our military. It's tax reform. Those are the things that we're working on. And infrastructure. Those are the things we're working on in this 2017 calendar.
Where's the in the equation?
Because that's in there as well. We see that as part of regulatory reform.
But in 200 days, you think that's doable?
This is our plan, yeah. And if there's any slippage, we'll finish it in the fall and get it done before the end of the year.
So if I come back in 200 days, you're gonna go, well, I made a promise. We got it done.
Well,
because I think this is important.
So here's what I'm saying. We've mapped this out for 200 days. We have a plan to do that. We're on schedule. But if anything slips because of
another
Supreme Court justice, or a filibuster on a cabinet nominee, that might slip us. But we're making sure that we do all of this in 2017.
Okay, let's go to the budget, which is such a big issue. The president, 7-3, 15% corporate rate. I know you prefer 20 because that scores with the CBO.
I prefer 15. I have to get what we can with the numbers.
You support repatriation, multinational corporations. That will be huge. That's a lot of money that can come back into the economy.
Probably about $3 trillion.
Here's my headline of this interview, that you're in pretty much full agreement with what Donald Trump ran on.
Yes.
And number two, in 200 days, from the legislative side, you are going to be implementing every aspect of that agenda that we talked about.
Yep, and just to
that's
add
a big headline.
And we have cushion in our schedule. If anything slips, because it's really because of Senate issues, we still have time to accommodate all of this stuff in 2017.
To give you
so I even have safety valves. I have cushions built in the schedule to make sure this all gets done in 2017.
Because I believe
in case something happens and goes sideways on the Senate.
I'm pretty sure that'll stimulate the economy, get people back to work, and get the economy moving again, which I think we need.
That's what we're hired to do.
All right, Mr. Speaker. We'll see you in 200 days.
All right, 23 now until the top of the hour. It's now 152 days that Donald Trump has been president. And, of course, there really wasn't a consensus plan on health care, so that made things go a lot longer and further than I think anybody expected or wanted. And he said they were going the fastest ever, and they'd even built in some cushion time. And I don't think a lot of this is going to happen. But I will say this, on top of all of these vicious, vile, hateful leftist attacks against the president, you know, that certainly has contributed to an environment where things aren't getting done. But if the Republicans want to hold on to their power, which, you know, they wanted this in 2010 and they got the House. They wanted it in 2014. They got the Senate. 2016, well, some of us, not all of them, well, we wanted Donald Trump to win the presidency. And to me, Congress is moving extraordinarily slow. Mitch McConnell's got to finish health care. They're talking about a 4th of July vacation, then an August vacation. The Freedom Caucus is saying, no, stop going on vacation. Let's do the work of the American people. That thought process is now gaining momentum, I know, in the White House. And I think getting the president's, you know, if the Republicans want to stay in power and the president wants to be successful, it's not going to be the noise and the vile rhetoric that prevents him from being in office. What's going to keep him in office is the president keeping his promises, creating jobs, moving us towards energy independence, moving us towards a 15% corporate rate, middle class tax cuts, repatriation of trillions, multinational corporations, you know, the millions of jobs that energy independence will create in this country. And then, of course, lower health care costs for families will be the equivalent of a tax cut for them. Larry Kudlow is with us, one of the smartest economic guys I know. He's a host on CNBC, former Reagan administration economist, author of the brand new book, JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. It's really not so secret. It's kind of fundamental, and any of us that are supply-siders, we know that cutting taxes and regulation leads to a rise in GDP and opportunity and employment and revenues to the government. It works every time. Larry, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you? Thank you.
What's going on, sir?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm with Mark Meadows. Steve Moore and I had lunch with Mark Meadows of the Freedom Caucus, I guess about 2 weeks ago in Washington. And that's when we talked about no August recess vacation until we get a significant tax cut bill. Okay? None. No recess. I'm sorry. And I don't think you can get the whole bill, but I think you can break off the business side, which, as you mentioned, 15% corporate rate, cash expensing for new equipment, repatriation, maybe put in there a doubling of the standard deduction. That's a good middle-income tax cut. But mostly, they can get this done, Sean, and they could attach this, which Steve and I call three easy pieces. They could attach this to the health care reconciliation bill for 51 votes. It is legal. It is technically doable. And our point of view is you're not going home until you get this done, because this would be the biggest booster to the economy.
Well, I agree, and I don't understand this idea. You know, one of the things I talk about on this program a lot with my staff, I don't get all the vacation days. There's less than 30 scheduled congressional work days between now. Remember, we're not even halfway through the year and the end of the year. Now, I got to be honest, you know, Larry, my work schedule's a lot more intense than that. I don't get to take off, you know, half the year, and God knows what they're doing. You know, I don't have time to eat lunch out. Do you ever go out eat lunch anywhere?
Very seldom.
I don't understand eating lunch outside of my office. I eat lunch at my desk, and usually it's Campbell's chicken noodle soup.
Well, listen.
I'm a real elitist, you know. Just listen to your friends over at MSNBC. They were making fun.
No, not my friends. I don't deal with MSNBC. I'm on CNBC. But
well, you're not going to get in trouble for saying that, but I admire your courage.
Well, that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. I'm with you.
Let's see. 7 days left in June and 21 days in July. That's all you got. So it's 28 days. Now, if you tacked on August, Sean, you'd have another 25 days, okay? But if you leave August, they go out of town, you're only going to have 44 calendar days, legislative calendar days, in September, October, November, December, where they're supposed to get a budget and a debt ceiling and so forth. So that just shows you we're going to lose 25 days unless they postpone the August recess vacation. And I would submit that so many Republicans favor these lower business tax rates. Remember, it's large and small companies. It's pass-throughs. It's immediate expensing for investment and repatriation. Everybody agrees with that. The Republican caucus agrees with that. So stay in August and get it done and stick it on to the health care reconciliation. It's legal and it's technical, Sean. And by the way, it's going to pay for itself. You're going to get at least 3% economic growth from this large and small business tax cut. Just do it. Just do it. And then wait until next year to do a grand omnibus tax reform bill, which, be honest with you, is going to take a long time. It's very contentious.
All right, I can deal with that. Are we going to get the corporate rates 15-17%? Because that's key.
I hope so.
I mean this year.
We should.
Are we going to get repatriation of the trillions of these multinational corporations that park their money overseas?
We should.
Are we going to get middle-class tax cuts?
By the way, the middle-class tax cuts, you know, the biggest beneficiary of the business tax cut, 70% of the benefits go to wage earners, middle-class wage earners. How's that? Now, somebody's got to say that. Somebody's got to...
Nobody understands, Larry, that half the people in this country in the labor force don't pay any federal income tax. Nothing. Zip.
Well, okay, that's true. But they do pay the payroll tax. I mean, that's very...
But they
important.
Don't pay income taxes.
But I don't...
I think you should pay more. That's what I think.
thank you for that. All I'm saying is, for Trump to make good on his promises, and I think he really wants to. I know that Mark Meadows was in with him yesterday, and they had a long talk about all this stuff, three easy pieces, no August recess. Trump liked it a lot, incidentally, from what I'm told. They can get this done. They can get this done, but they're going to have to work at it, okay? So they work in August. And then you can pass a reconciliation bill with health care reform and tax cuts.
And you agree with me, though, it's got to be done this year.
Yes, yes.
And how about, and don't the American people need to see 200 or 300 miles of the wall built?
I'd love to see that. I'd absolutely love to see that go along with it. By the way, nothing's happening there, or maybe some things are happening there. But look, you need growth. You know, right now, the latest numbers show production, manufacturing, retail sales, housing starts. Sean, they're all falling. They're all falling. And long-term interest rates are falling. That's a sign of a lousy economy. And the inflation rate is falling, which is not a bad thing, but it's not what the Fed expected. I'm just saying the economy is not getting stronger. It may well be getting weaker. And I'm also saying that by next year, if there's no palpable increase for middle-income wage earners and so forth, the Republicans may have a hard time in the midterms. They may really have a hard time. So I don't believe that the whole package can be done in the fall. There's not enough calendar days to do
it.
Do it now.
If they get energy independence, the wall built, they got Gorsuch. If they get health care, repeal and replace, mm-hmm. it's not my bill, but it's better and it's a start. I think they'll be okay in 2018. And you're right, then improve upon all of these things into the next year.
Sure. Absolutely. See, that's a great point. Ronald Reagan had a phrase. When I worked for him, I heard him. Everybody heard him say this. Give me half a loaf now, and I'll get the other half later. What I'm saying is, and what Steve Moore is saying, and Mark Meadows and other people, actually we can get more than half a loaf now by going into these business tax cuts, you know, for LLCs, pass-throughs, wholly owned proprietorships, et cetera, et cetera. You will see an immediate growth surge, okay? The money's out there, but the firms, large and small, do not want to make a commitment of 5, 10, 20 years until they know what the Congress is going to do. If they see it happen and they see the rates come down and it's retroactive to January 2017, which is what they've been talking about, you will see an immediate, I'm talking immediate pop in the economy, jobs,
stay right there.
And wages.
And stay right there. Larry Kudlow is with us. By the way, this book is so worth reading if you want to start economic growth in the country, and it's called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. All right, as we continue, Larry Kudlow is with us, CNBC host and author of the book, JFK, the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. All right, so why am I impatient, angry, frustrated with the slow pace at which Congress is doing their job? Do you feel the same way?
I do. You know, it's really a drain the swamp thing. I mean, it's like I'd like to see the president be much, much tougher. For example, on using reconciliation, which is 51 votes in the Senate, for our purposes, right? The Democrats always play hardball with these rules. Why don't we play hardball with these rules? Sometimes Speaker Ryan, who's a good guy, and I've known him, God, 25 years, but he's sort of hogtied by this process stuff. We can change that to our advantage. Why do we have to use the Congressional Budget Office 1.8% growth estimates for 10 years? There's no law that says we have to do that. CBO is part of the swamp. Change it, for heaven's sakes.
Well, Newt Gingrich has been saying this, and by the way, they're almost always wrong.
Yes, yes.
By a lot, not by a little.
No, by tens of trillions of dollars, they're always wrong.
I always keep using them. Good thing they're not my accountant.
How about this? Borrow from Reagan, Sean. In 1981, Reagan spoke to the nation twice from the Oval Office on tax cuts. Couldn't have been clearer. In fact, one time we created some charts for him. He put using a pointer. I think the president's got to make his own case. I don't think he can rely on Congress. He's a great spokesman. He's a great communicator. He's a great salesman. He's got to do it. And the people around him have got to prepare it and lay the groundwork and so forth. You can't wait for Ryan. You can't wait for the leadership.
They've got to do
it. Trump's got to do this.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Larry Kudlow, always love having you. And we appreciate you being with us. 800-9... We're actually one of the good people at NBC, and there's not a lot of them. He's like one of the few. 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza, news roundup, information overload. We're going to talk about the loud, incendiary rhetoric of the left. Katie Hopkins, the gobby one from D.C., will continue.
It is a weird tension. I think it's a dangerous time for the First Amendment and for the free press in this country. And at the same time, we're oddly influential with the guy who wants to kill us.
And to our detractors that insist that this march will never add up to anything? F*** you. You. But this is the hallmark of revolution. Yes, I'm angry. Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
You know, I had a dream the other night about that I was playing golf with Donald Trump, and I was standing beside him with a club in my hand, and I was, you know, considering my options when I suddenly woke up. You know, it was one of those dreams where you want to just get back to sleep so you can finish it, you know?
That was pretty good. I might have to put Mr. Burgess on Fox News. I'll put Mr. Burgess up against Sean Hannity. He'll tear him up. I need you to go out and talk to your friends and talk to your neighbors. I want you to talk to them whether they're independent or whether they are Republican. I want you to argue with them and get in their faces.
Press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish you were in high school. I could take him behind the gym. That's what I wish.
What we've got to do is fight in Congress, fight in the courts, fight in the streets, fight online, fight at the ballot box. And now there's the momentum to be able to do this.
This is a death panel bill because people will die. This is deadly. This is deadly.
I can't stand him.
I am.
He's the most horrible man I've ever seen in my life. Your president is a dishonorable, lying man.
Ordinary people who simply saw what needed to be done and came together and supported those ideals who have made the difference. They've marched. They've bled. Yes, some of them have died. This is hard. Every good thing is. We have done this before. We can do this again.
I don't respect this president. I don't trust this president. He's not working in the best interest of the American people. His motives and his actions are contemptible. And I will fight every day until he is impeached. Impeached 45. Impeach 45.
As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Oh, Ivanka's going to be our saving grace. You know, when he's about to nuke Finland or something, she's going to walk into the bedroom and, you know,
yeah,
Daddy, don't do it, Daddy. You know?
I mean, he's so blatantly stupid. He's a punk. He's a dog. He's a pig. He's a con, a bullshit artist, a mutt who doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't do his homework, doesn't care, thinks he's gaming society, doesn't pay his taxes. He's an idiot. Colin Powell said it best. He's a national disaster. He's an embarrassment to this country. It makes me so angry that this country has gotten to this point, that this fool, this bozo, has wound up where he has. He talks how he wants to punch people in the face. Well, I'd like to punch him in the face.
And I might just kill ISIS with the same ice pick that I murdered Donald Trump in the same night with.
Which enemy are you most proud of?
Probably the Republicans.
All right, that, of course, the incendiary rhetoric of the left that we get day in and day out, and it never stops. Where has it led us to? Oh, let's see, ISIS posing of severed heads of the president. What has it led us to? Oh, we have a nightly Shakespeare play where Trump lookalike gets assassinated every night. What has it led us to? Now we're going to talk about the first daughter and incest, and we're going to talk about, oh, the first lady used to be a hooker, and we're going to, you know, show the 11-year-old son of the president a severed head of his father in an ISIS pose, and then we're going to talk about beating up the president, hitting him with golf clubs, you know, taking him behind the school and everything else crazy Uncle Joe says. Just stop for a second and think, oh, what if Obama was hearing this? What if this was during the Obama years? What would we think then? Joining us now, News Roundup Information Overload Hour, Jeffrey Lord is with us. Of course, he's with the American Spectator and author of a great-selling book, by the way, one of the best in the country, and that is The Case for Trump, What America Needs. Chris Hahn of the ever-growing Chris Hahn Show, now up to its third affiliate nationwide, one day a week.
Yeah, baby.
Now expanding to two pretty soon, from what I hear. You know, Chris, how are you going to defend that rhetoric? These are your peeps. And by the way, not a single leading Democrat that I know condemned Al Franken had to because he was supposed to go out on tour, but he only did it after it didn't work out, first defending Kathy Griffin. Then when there was backlash, then he had to say, oh, I'm canceling my trip, just like he canceled his appearance on Bill Maher. But the question is, where's Obama? Where's your friend Hillary Clinton and Chucky?
Well, about Obama's probably just wondering why there's so much rage from the right, considering you guys had Ted Nugent at the White House last year, who used to call him a subhuman mongrel. And he's still on the board, just recently reelected to the board of the NRA, a guy who told the President of the United States to
All right, you can use that example. That's
that
a great point.
Invited to the White
House.
You
know what? You're giving me a headache. That's why you only have three affiliates. It's so annoying. I asked you a question about the rhetoric of the left, the leaders. Ted Nugent's a rock and roll band star. Okay? Kathy Griffin works for CNN, or she did. You know, if you compare crazy Uncle Joe Biden, I'm sorry, he's the vice president of the United States. Jim Carrey is one of America's most popular actors. If you look and you compare and you contrast, it's not the same thing, nor do you have the level of intensity, nor the instances that we're talking about here. And you don't seem to give a rip.
As celebrity supporters go, Ted Nugent's about as big as the right has. So, you know, you guys hold him up. He takes pictures at the White House in the Oval Office this week, last month, excuse me. You know, and he said a lot of crazy things. So he's still around. He's still a leader in your biggest advocacy organization, the National Rifle Association. So I think we've got to look at both of those. I don't like the rhetoric. I don't like violent rhetoric. I don't like what some of these things say. I don't like the Kathy Griffin picture. I think it's ridiculous. But, you know, we've got to look both ways here, Sean, and we can't say that this wasn't happening for the last 8 years on the right.
What's your reaction? You know, I see this mysterious reluctance and resistance, Jeffrey, to condemn. Now, I'll add one thing to the equation. Now we have assassination lists of Republican lawmakers and assassination attempts against Republicans. So I would say the ante has been up significantly.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, two things. Number one, of course, the individuals that do these acts are responsible for what they do, and this guy, Hodgkinson, is responsible. That said, Sean, and I've written a column on this at the Spectator, I think, when you look at the history of the American left, I mean, whether it was the Ku Klux Klan, which was described by historians as the, quote-unquote, the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party, or the military arm of the Democratic Party, labor violence. When Ronald Reagan was an actor and was active in the Screen Actors Guild and was protesting communism, he got threats of having acid thrown in his face. In my lifetime, your lifetime, the SDF would threaten violence. And then, of course, the Weather Underground and Bill Ayers and all of that. And then you move up to current time, and it's Occupy Wall Street, running through the streets of Seattle, smashing windows, etc. This is part of the left. This is in the DNA. Violence is in the DNA of the left. Donald Trump is merely the latest excuse. This has been going on for, you know, over a century that they've been doing this. So, in a sense, sad to say, there's nothing surprising. All it is just the newest target.
I find it hard to believe that you still call the KKK the left. They were Democrats.
Stop for a second. That would be Robert Byrd. You know, remember the Civil Rights Act 64, the Voting Rights Act 65. It was Lyndon Johnson that needed Republicans because Democrats like Byrd, like Al Gore's father, were nowhere to be found. So stop with the revised history lesson here.
Parties realigned, and there was an uneasy truce between Northern Democrats and Southern Democrats. It's not the same party it was then. And to call the KKK part of the left, they were always part of the right. They just changed teams. The right is now on
so
the
you're
side.
So you're saying, all right, Nate, whoa. I'm not letting this pass. Jeffrey, I'm not going to let this pass.
Yeah,
Robert KKK Byrd was the Senate Majority Leader and Minority Leader, if I'm not mistaken. The leader of your party, former Grand Poobah Ku Klux Klan. Now, with all due respect, Chris, stop with the revisionism. That is your party. The reason that President Johnson needed Republicans is because Democrats were nowhere to be found. So stop lying to the audience and just be honest. Do I think that your party embraces the Klan? No, but neither do Republicans. And you know what? There's no conservative that I know in the country that supports these lunatics, these racists, these vile anti-Semitic, anti-Catholic people. So let's stop with the nonsense and the gameplay.
Exactly. And for that matter, David Duke endorsed Occupy Wall Street along with President Obama and Nancy Pelosi. So there's still a streak of this left yet. But this is a real problem that the American left has to confront. I mean, why does this come back over and over and over and over again? I mean, Occupy Wall Street wasn't 100 years ago. Occupy Wall Street was just the day before yesterday, relatively speaking.
So David Duke may have endorsed something that was somewhat liberal. So that equates all liberals with David Duke.
Somewhat liberal. Chris, they were smashing windows in the streets of Seattle. That's not liberal, is it?
Jeffrey, to put him in the same category is ridiculous. He's an outlier. He should be banned from society. We should all shun him. No Democrat supports David Duke.
You know what's amazing? We start out, Chris cannot say what is so obvious to be said is that the left wing in this country has gone overboard in their incendiary rhetoric, lies, conspiracies, hatred towards the president. All right, 800-941, Sean is our number. Thank you both for being with us.
Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Remember him, midnight ride down to the EOB? He's telling donors in California this weekend that the Russian collusion story is made up. Quote, I was telling the truth. There was never any collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians. We have to stop chasing Russian ghosts around the closet and actually get to real work. Well, other Republicans echoed that thinking. Let's watch.
This has now become like Russia, Trump conspiracy,
right.
Birther conspiracies, you know, sort of truthers.
What a hoot. Did you just hear Hannity? He just compared it to birtherism. In other words, the nonsense of Trump is now standard for nonsense, even though it was Trump himself he was defending.
It's a great clip. And this is not.
Doesn't he know that that was Trump's, that was his birtherism?
And this
doesn't Hannity keep a file cabinet? This is Trump's crap. This isn't somebody else's. It's amazing.
No, he does.
Second reason this is about to become a big story is because a federal racketeering lawsuit, a RICO lawsuit against Felix Sater's company in which he partnered with Donald Trump. That RICO lawsuit has been allowed to go forward now. And the former employee who has brought that RICO lawsuit against Felix Sater and his former company in which he partnered with Donald Trump, that RICO lawsuit, the guy who brought that RICO lawsuit, is now telling a reporter named Tim O'Brien at Bloomberg News that when Felix Sater and his company put together the financing for those Trump projects, including the Trump Soho, they had a very specific explanation internally at their company for why they had to take some foreign financing for the Trump projects and why they had to turn some other foreign financing down. Quote, the ex-employee said in an interview that a competitor of the FL Group also contacted him to invest. When he took that offer to Felix Sater and the chairman of Sater's firm, they told him, he says, that they had to take FL's funds for deals they were doing with Trump because that investment firm was, quote, closer to Putin. Why did you have to take the money that was closer to Putin? Tim O'Brien from Bloomberg News is just reporting that tonight. We've got an exclusive first look at that reporting. He's going to be joining us in just a moment. But if his reporting proves out, and between the racketeering lawsuit that's going ahead and the Senate investigation and the financial documents they're getting from Treasury as of today, and the investigation that Robert Mueller is leading as special counsel, whose staff, I should tell you, now includes the former fraud chief at the Justice Department who was involved in the prosecution of Felix Sater for that pump and dump mob stock scheme all those years ago. If this new reporting from Tim O'Brien proves out about Russian money pouring into Trump properties and it coming from sources close to Putin through people known for their mob and money laundering ties, if that reporting proves out, we're left with the question of why that happened. Why was money connected to Putin pouring into Trump projects? Why did they do that? And if it did happen, is it likely now, all these years later, that that sort of thing's going to get somebody in trouble?
We have never thought of ourselves as a country where, like, Uday and Kusei get to be ministers of whatever they want, right? We don't think of ourselves as a ruling family kind of place, but now that's what we are.
You know, you gotta love, I mean, conspiracy theory TV is fascinating. You know, Flynn, the biggest scandal in presidential history, and Trump firing Comey, unprecedented, and then cites Clinton. And then, of course, Mr. Thrill-up-his-leg, Obama-gasm himself, Chris Matthews. I got to be honest, this is getting very entertaining. NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw and John Chancellor. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
You.
Why?
You Nazi.
I'm not a Nazi.
You Nazi.
I'm a journalist.
You. You're not a journalist.
Yes, I am.
You. You're not a journalist.
How do you know which side I'm on?
You. You're not a journalist if you're acting like this.
Acting like.
You. You.
I just want the truth.
You.
I'm not a journalist if I want the truth.
You.
I'm just here documenting sides.
You.
Why are you so angry at me?
You.
Why are you so angry?
The fascist journalists are the worst. You.
Who's a fascist? I'm
you
not.
Are
How am I a fascist?
You.
How am I a fascist?
You. Nazi.
I filmed your side first, and then I filmed them.
Which is, having spoken to the mayor of New York, our people, his office, our people having spoken to the police here, the advice we've received is 29 people have been injured. There are my thoughts and prayers. The advice we've received from the police service here and from the mayor's office is to carry on business as usual. I'm not going to speculate as to who was responsible. I'm not going to speculate as to how the police in New York should react. What I do know is part and parcel of living in a great global city is you've got to be prepared for these things. You've got to be vigilant. You've got to support the police doing an incredibly hard job. You've got to support the security services. And I think speculating when you don't know the facts is unwise.
I can't believe that Katie Hopkins has chosen this to be her introduction song. It's just the worst possible song I think I can ever imagine. Would you love it? I don't. I absolutely do not love it, but I think I do have a better song for you. And it's, you know, Katie's going to have to put her party light on a little bit and have a little bit of fun and shoot some bullets at the moon. Let's see if we can do it.
Where the party's at. This is how we roll. Whoa, 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 whoa. We hanging around, singing down everything on the radio. Whoa, 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 whoa. We light it up with our hands up. This is how we roll.
This is how we do. Shooting bullets at the moon. All right, wait a minute. Now, Gobby one, don't you like shooting bullets? Have you ever shot a gun in your life?
Yes, of course. At Sandhurst, we used to have quite a lot of training with arm rifles, which are SA-80s. I wasn't too bad, actually.
You weren't too bad, actually. All right, now listen, I got a question. I don't understand why you chose that music when you're going to have my music and a little party music, because you're like a lot of fun. And it's this stiff
British... This is how
British...
we roll. This is how we roll. Ooh, 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 ooh. You don't know why I didn't choose that.
Wait a minute. Do that again. How does the song go?
Goes, this is how we roll. This is how we roll. Ooh, 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 ooh. Like, he ran out of, like, he only had a few lyrics in there to start with, and then he ran out real early and just went to vowels. I don't call that much of a song.
Well, okay, so you prefer the British marching,
yes,
stiff, uptight palace version.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr.
Yeah.
Hattie, and I respect that this is your show, but we did agree that the music would be for my segment, and that's my music, and somehow you're imposing your music on my segment.
No, I'm trying to give you an option that will make you a lot cooler and hipper in America than that uptight British whatever you want to call it thing. You know what's funny? I got beaten up this week.
How rude.
I know, can you believe it? People attacking me like they do you in Britain. And these pompous, arrogant, you know, elitist, snotty, snooty little, you know, dimwits over at MSNBC, they were like, oh, doesn't Hannity understand Shakespeare? This is the problem. Julius Caesar, E tu, Brute, Romeo, 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 wherefore art thou, Romeo? He knows not. I bet he doesn't even know the century in which Shakespeare actually wrote these plays, and he doesn't even know the meaning, or he's never read in his life the plays. I'm like, hey, you moron. You have a nightly assassination of a Donald Trump lookalike, and we just had literally an assassination attempt against congressmen and an assassination list, and you're lecturing me on the benefits and the lack of understanding of the profundity of Shakespeare in the Park when you lay out your blanket and have caviar and champagne and stick it up your nose. I honestly can't take these people.
It is very popular that way of, I mean, it's here all the time as well, that split. So you've got London and the people that voted Remain and the people that want to vote for Labour, for people that are giving away money to kids, like free tuition, free this, like there's some kind of cash cow in the sky kind of weeing money on people. They all say that they're the intelligent ones, you know, the intelligent elite, and that the rest of us are too stupid to even know what we voted for. And it's a similar way of thinking that you have over there, just because we want to disrupt a ridiculous performance of a pathetic play that should not be allowed. They think you're stupid. Well, you're not stupid. You're considerably smarter than them.
Well, I'm certainly more successful than them. Number one, I make more money than them, if that's any measure of success. Listen, I'm going to tell you, Katie, for me, as a guy that grew up kind of blue-collar, middle class, lower middle class, and my parents didn't have any money, but they sacrificed everything to send us to Catholic schools and a seminary for high school. And I got to tell you something, the average person out of work, the average person that's on food stamps, the average person that can't find a job and is in poverty, they don't give a flying rip about caviar, blankets, champagne, and the profundity of Etude Brute and an assassination attempt on the president. I didn't know Julius Caesar had anything to do with Trump.
Absolutely not. And it's that, you know, we have it here at the same, let's get, you know, the Opera House or any of the sort of high brow, as I would call it, versus, you know, my family, the family I grew up with as well, regular British people who just want to stay happy and healthy and they want the best
right.
for their family. They don't give
right.
a stuff about all this stuff that the Londoners, the intellectual elite, you know, they just bathe in their own self-importance at these events because it makes them look even more clever, whereas the rest of us look at them, point, and laugh.
Well, I mean, listen, if somebody appreciates Shakespeare, I mean, that's a nice luxury to have in life. Like, for example, I know that there are parents that have their kids studying violin and the piano and the arts and they take artistry and all of this stuff. That's all great, but for the average person that's struggling to put food on their table, pay for a roof over their head, and have a decent car, and maybe take one Disney vacation every 5 years, you know what? They don't give a flying rip. And I'll be honest, I have no respect for these people that they don't respect the people and the struggles that most people go through. They're a bunch of overpaid, spoiled brats in this business I work in. And I, you know what? I despise them all. I don't like any of them, except you.
Oh, you're so sweet. Well, I love you too. But I agree with you entirely, of course. You know, the liberals that we have, and they are liberal fascists, of course, as well. It strikes me that they're always the ones preaching to us, you know, about open door immigration. We should, you know, they're the ones holding the signs, welcome refugees. They're the ones sort of chiding people like me who say, no, we're full up. We can't take any more. And yet they're always the ones who live in the most expensive, most exclusive, most elite areas of the country. They're the ones with the private health, the private schooling, the private everything, which I respect, private health, private schooling. But, you know, of course, that means that they do have the liberty of being somewhat distant from these people that they are inviting into where we live. You know, it's a very different thing. They live in this island. It's very clinical, and it's very clean and very sterilized. Where we live, we've got these people living in amongst us, and we're the ones that have to put up with the fact that they say, refugees welcome.
You know, it's such a good point that you're making. You know, I know that you had yet another attack in Great Britain just, what, a day or so ago, and a man took a van and smashed it into Muslims as they were leaving a mosque at 2 a.m. in the morning, and he said he wanted to kill all Muslims and that he was proud of what he had done, and he even blew the crowd a kiss as he's taken away. You know, there are sick people on all sides here. There really are.
Yeah,
There are.
I mean, I think it's. I think the mainstream media here have done us a disservice labeling that terror. I mean, I appreciate what he did was hideous and it was very wrong. He did take a van. He was drunk. He's got a lot of personal issues in his family, and that does not excuse anything. But he did just run that van into someone who was ill on the street and hurt some of the people who were looking after that man. It has been reported slightly cynically, I think, by CNN and others, and no one was killed by the van. That gentleman was very poorly on the floor. He'd fainted at a bus stop. But I take the point that there is problems on all sides, and what we see in the London in particular is just an endless volley of knives, of stabbings, of, you know, we have the nursery worker stabbed.
Well, that's the same thing. It's the same, Katie. There was an attack today in Michigan,
yes,
where a cop was stabbed, and, you know, the guy's screaming, Allahu Akbar. And how many times have we seen this headline, both in Great Britain, Europe, and the United States?
Absolutely right. We had two more incidents. Whilst the mosque incident was happening with the white van, we had two more Allahu Akbar incidents happen just in that time period. I started a new campaign, actually, for our London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and it's on my Twitter feed. It's Safer to Be in Syria, which I think is the new campaign message for London as we promote it on the international stage, that actually don't come here. It's truly terrifying, and it is safer to be in Syria.
You know, that's such a sad thing. And when you really think and deeply think about the idea, when Piers Morgan confronted the London mayor about allowing people from Great Britain, and they go fight for ISIS in Syria, and then they come back to Great Britain, and you don't know where they are, or you allow, the jihadi living next door, and you got video of him, you know, on his knees, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, and holding up the ISIS flag, which represents death and destruction and a culture of death and destruction and terrorism. And I'm thinking, you didn't arrest this guy? You didn't throw this guy out?
Absolutely. And, the other kind of sickening thing, I appreciate, and I haven't spoken to many of my Jewish friends here, you know, very hard for people in London who, our Jewish friends here, already feel it's a difficult climate to operate in. They already go around with, you know, caps on and things so that they aren't identified as being Jewish. You know, the London mayor allowed for a large protest demonstration through the centre of London where people were waving the flags of Hezbollah and Hamas, small children with the Hezbollah flag parading through the streets in favour, obviously, of Palestine and anti-Israel, but allowed to parade that flag through the streets, the flag of a terrorist organisation. And then, of course, the white van hits someone outside the mosque, and our mayor is back there saying, we will not tolerate terror on our streets. But, of course, he allowed that parade to happen using that flag, which, of course, is highly, highly offensive to so many. So it's a tale of so many cities and a tale of so much hypocrisy from our leadership. It's hard to know where we're at right now.
What's going to happen as a result of your recent elections and Theresa May?
Well, we've just had the Queen's speech today, where the Queen comes to the House of Commons and reads out the kind of parliamentary programme for the next 2 years. And unfortunately, because Theresa May did so very, very poorly in the election, she didn't even get the majority she needed. She basically ripped up all of her manifesto, all of the pledges. If you imagine Trump on the campaign trail, imagine him standing there when he got into power and ripping up everything he promised. That's essentially what happened today, and we ended up with this horrible scenario where our beautiful, brilliant, amazing 91-year-old Queen sat there like a true trooper in Parliament reading out the dullest Queen's speech of all time, which contained virtually nothing and mentioned things like car insurance. That woman, 91 years old, has served this country for 65 years solid, and the best thing that our pathetic politicians could give her to read was some documents about how we're going to change the way we look at car insurance. Honestly, Sean, I could have thrown my blooming underwear at the TV in horror.
You wear bloomers? Is that what you said? Bloomers underwear? I didn't hear you.
They are huge. They go out from the waist down to my knees and just overhang my leg hair. They are huge.
You know what? I got to bring you to the States, and we got to Americanize you just a little bit with your music selections.
Oh, God.
Totally. All right. Katie Hopkins, the gobby one. God bless you, Katie. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is how we roll. We roll into your town. Holler at your boy. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today from D.C. Tonight, Laura Ingraham, Kellyanne Conway, Jay Sekulow, Mark Meadows, and Jim Jordan, Sarah Carter, and Geraldo. 10 Eastern, live show, Hannity from D.C., and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thank you, as always, for being with us, making the show possible. We'll see you tonight at 10.